The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
For our Tay Show this morning, you're going to get a bonus. Two talks for the price of one. Double header. I will begin the talk, and then our Dharma brother, Reverend Paul, will complete it. So we've been looking into a koan. And Alan's wonderful talk yesterday really dug deep into this, the hidden and not so hidden meanings in this koan. And I'm going to read it for you again, but I would like you to approach it and listen to it with fresh ears. And not so much about the content of what's happening between these two people, but more the overarching feeling, atmosphere, vibe, if you will. What's happening between these two people, teacher and student? What is the sense of their relationship, and what is the sense that you have in your heart when you hear these people speaking to one another? Can you sense the compassion the teacher has, even though he hits the student? Can you sense the urgency and the yearning from the student to see into the true nature of his own self? This is a story that's transcended many, many, many years and comes to us right here, right now, during this sesshin. But it's not a story that happened a long time ago. It's a story that's happening right now in your hearts, in this zenda, in our relationships between teachers and students, in Doksan. So here is the story. Luopu went to Jaishan and without bowing stood facing him. Jaishan said, "A chicken in a phoenix nest, not the same class. Go away." Wu-Pu said, "I've come from far away, hearing about your virtue. Please give me one touch." Jiaoshan said, "There is no you before my eyes, and there is no me here." Wu-Pu shouted. Jiaoshan said, "Oh, stop it. Don't be so hasty. Clouds and moon are the same. Valleys and mountains are different from each other. It's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth, but how can you make a tongueless person speak?" Wu-Pu said nothing. Jiaoshan hit him, and with this, Wu-Pu became Jiaoshan's student. In Zen, teaching is quite different from conventional teaching. The student-teacher relationship is not the same as you have been sort of indoctrinated in our culture and our education system. Because in Zen, the teacher cannot give you anything that you don't already have. All the teacher does, in many cases, is hold a mirror or point a finger to something that is right in front of you, right on the tip of your nose. And Zen teachers aren't any special people that have some special talent. They're just people who have walked the path that you're on, only a few steps ahead. The great Chan master Yun Nen said, "You all have your own light, but if you try to find it, you cannot. This light is what a teacher points to. Call this light your true nature, your true self, your face before your parents were born. It doesn't quite matter. In fact, really, You don't want to think about it too much, because that'll make it an object. And this true light, you cannot dim. You can't mask it. You can't hide it. You can't polish it. You can't make it brighter. When you enter a Goksan room with the teacher, you present yourself completely. No matter how much you try to hide or how much you try to place in front of the teacher, you're you. And that's all the teacher is there to do, to show you the boundless, fathomless you. But as human beings, and I'm one of those human beings, we feel like there's something we have to present, or there's something that we have inside of us. Knowledge, experience, some understanding that we need to hold on to show, here I am, this is me. And that can work for a little while. But the real work with Zen teachers is to be able to allow that to loosen. Allow yourself to come forth and take up space. The space that's your birthright as a human. When we were younger, we formed these identities that were around ourselves, in our beliefs, the way we think, and they were all informed by our parents, our culture, maybe a church, community, school, friends, and they were very, very important parts of developing a self, a strong sense of self. To take out into the world so that you can function. But inevitably we see that if we cling too tightly to that self, to that identity, to those things that we know, they pull us down, they anchor us, they limit us, and prevent us from coming forth as our true authentic self. That authentic self that we can't define, we can't create, we can't construct. There's a wonderful old cartoon in the New Yorker of a man holding onto a rock, and he's going down to the bottom of the ocean, and he's yelling, "My stone, my precious stone." That's us, hanging on to something that most often can drag us down, but is necessary, certainly. The tool of the self, the tool of what we know and the things we bring to our life is a tool, is a implement that we can get things that we need. But that identity that clings to that, that presents itself to the world as us, is not ultimately real. In our story, Little Pooh presents this idea, coming to the teacher, facing him, not bowing. Of course, we bow to the teacher because, not out of deference, but we see the teacher as ourself. The teacher sees us as themselves. Giver, receiver, gift. The emptiness of the three wheels. But this monk had something in his mind. This is how I'm supposed to perform and how I act. This is how I present myself. I'm going to pass the test. Of course, he doesn't. And he's continually pushed by his teacher. In what appears like a rather violent and aggressive way. Now, who knows what actually happened, if this actually happened? It doesn't quite matter. The story is that it's a reflection of us as who we are. And how we continually use the things that are a tool, or sometimes temporary usefulness, as a solid sense of who we are to present to the world, covering our light. I remember when I received Dharma transmission from my teacher, David Reinick Roshi. I had already been giving Dharma talks for about 5 or 6 years. And that was an incredibly monumental thing to receive his transmission. And so at the time I thought, wow, okay, I better step up my game and start to learn more about Buddhism. And I read some significant Buddhist books and some sutras and started to get really knowledgeable about those things, and then decided I was going to give a talk about that. And that's where I was going to step forward as a true transmitted teacher. And not long after, David gave me some feedback. He said, "I didn't give you Dharma transmission for your knowledge of Buddhism." And ouch. Ouch, that hurt. And of course, yeah, right. Right. This transmission between student and teacher, between teacher and student, not something that we're given, not something to give. Just a revelation, a revealing of the true Dharma, which we are. When I came to this temple as its caretaker and then subsequently as its director, I had very little knowledge of gardening. And my idea of gardening was dig a hole, put something in it, water it, and throw some bark mulch so the weeds wouldn't grow. And of course, if you spend some time in this garden, that's not what this garden is like. And this garden is under the wonderful care of my teacher, David. And so he took me under his wing, and I wanted to learn. But the way he taught wasn't the way I had imagined. We didn't sit down and run over all the names of plants and what was good, what was bad. We just meandered. I got a shovel in my hand, and he pointed to the ground and said, "This goes there. Let's put this here. Let's dig that up and put it over there." And it seemed chaotic. It seemed like, when am I going to learn gardening? And admittedly, I cut more flowers than weeds. Didn't really know the difference. But eventually something happened. Eventually, I got transmission, gardening transmission. I don't know how I do it. I don't know how David did this. Just this mysterious transmission of being in the presence of a caring and kind teacher was enough. It wasn't expedient by any means. It's been almost 5 years that I've lived here, and I'm still just starting to get the hang of the gardening thing. On Thursday, the two of us were up in the front of the property digging plants in, and he just didn't say a word, just pointed thing to the ground, and we put some plants in and talked about various things. It was just an incredible teaching. That wasn't a teaching. And this is what's happening in this story. The circumstances are different, and yet the teaching is always here. And the teacher opens that opportunity, that doorway, to you, to me. Allow me to taste this life, allowing my light to shine, unconcerned about how it shines, what it looks like, how it's received. Just stepping forward as a human being in this world. And that's how we fulfill our bodhisattva vows, to save all beings. Now I'm going to stop here and allow Reverend Paul to clarify everything I said.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you all. I wanted to highlight, I will come on again towards the end, but just wanted to highlight the title that is given to this particular case, Luopo's obeyance. And I love what Michael's pointing to in this aspect that this koan is on the as far as is on paper and has been passed down centuries after centuries, and this koan is really happening right here in the Zendo. Whether we read this koan or reread it, how many times we reread it, it is happening right here. So what is this obeyance? I did not take the time to look it up and have no interest in looking it up, other than this aspect of this obey. And I think temptation may be to focus on the role of this perceived teacher, as far as Jaishan. And I do find it interesting that this is not titled after Jaishan. It's titled after Luopo. And what is he obeying? What is he obeying? If not the teacher, what is he obeying? This is something that amazes me. I'm astonished by his willingness to show up. Jaishan sent a letter, invitation, and invited, and Luopo showed up. At one level, it's hard for me to imagine what it took this former assistant of Linji, this person who has been on this mountain, as Alan Sensei was telling us yesterday, for a year in his hut. What does it take to show up? And I said maybe it's hard for me to imagine, and at the same level, it's actually quite easy to imagine. For me, in this perspective, I just have to open my eyes and see each and every one of you. Luopo feels something, knows something that is calling out to him. And it's, as much as I love what Michael is saying, the relationship between these two players, these two human beings, this student and teacher. I think what I'm most touched by is the student. And in truth, I think Anne Fine pointed it out yesterday in the Dharma Dialogue, both are students. This perpetual willingness to be student. As Michael's pointing out, the self that brought you to this sesshin, all of the stories, and I love the fact that Michael kept using the term story for this koan, because we do have these stories, the stories about ourself, who we are, what works, what we're not, what I will do, what I will not do, all of these things serves us so well. And Liapu, in my mind, is inviting us to look deeply at those stories. Deshan quips that, you know, what is this, a chicken in a phoenix nest? I like to say that that Liapu is a phoenix. That he is willing to burn up this phoenix, imagine all of us know, is this immortal being. Immortal in the sense that as it ages, it burns up, and from the ashes, this new phoenix is born. So bring your stories here. Sit on your seat. Look at these stories. And allow the flame to come to you. It's not due to some type of logistics that you spend so much time sitting in zazen, watching how your own mind works, and so little time with the teachers in Doksan. All of this is important. Please hear Michael's words around this teacher-student relationship in Doksan. And it's no accident that we sit so long in zazen with our own minds, and then check in. On the first night, Michael was giving fire safety, and he said there's only two flames allowed in this temple, one on the altar and one in the kitchen. I'm not prone to disagree with Michael. If I may extend this, that there is a flame burning on every single seat here. And what this flame is doing, it is cooking us. Allowing the fullness of flavors to come through. I like making chili. I have my chili recipe down, and the recipe is less about what goes in it and how long I'm willing to let it simmer. I start my chili in the morning right after breakfast for an evening meal. We're cooking right here. Look to Liapu and his willingness to be this perpetual student, bringing everything that he had up to that moment and showing up, just like each and every one of us, bringing everything to the cushion, showing up and willing to be cooked. Liapu's obeyance. Liapu went to Jishan and without bowing stood facing him. Jishan said, "A chicken in a phoenix nest? Not the same class. Go away." Liapu said, "I have come from far away, hearing about your virtue. Please give me one touch." Jishan said, "There is no you before my eyes. There is no me here." Liapu shouted. Jishan said, "Stop it. Don't be so hasty. Clouds and moon are the same. valleys and mountains are different from each other. It's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth, but how can you make a tongueless person speak? Liu Pu said nothing. Jishan hit him. Liu Pu became Jishan's student. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. We'll move into our Dharma dialogue and invite the servers to come around. Maybe something about the words shared here by Michael and myself, or all of this cooking on the cushion, something coming up for you. The three of us are willing to entertain and to meet whatever shows up.
Start with Steve.
Thank you for the talk. Talks.
Yeah, I was going to say, you thanked him. All right.
You're the doubleheader. And I'll take the bait.
Go.
So what came up for me was the question, who chooses, the student choosing the teacher, or does the teacher choose the student?
What comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They say that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah, I know that's what's said. Yeah. I think that's kind of like.
Right. So, what's this? Tell me.
Well, I think it's an interesting, for lack of a better word, dance. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, when we're kids, you know, how do you ask a girl to? It's a tough thing. Okay.
How do you dance?
Yeah, exactly. But I will say this. Okay, I will say this because when you were talking about cooking, Paul, and the flame and so on, I think the image that came up for me was flint and steel, and you know, to create a spark.
Sure.
And I mean, that's what I see in this koan, is this incredible spark. You know, it's like these two just meet, and all of a sudden, there's a spark there.
Yeah, and I like where you're going with this, because, and the spark has to be in their hearts. I have had many opportunities at Dokusan where the student comes in, and they're not ready to be a student. And when they're not a student, I'm not a teacher. It's just kind of you know, something, maybe a conversation or something going on. I can sense when someone's ready to be a student, comes in with an empty cup, comes in with an open heart, then we can work. Then I become a teacher. Until that moment, I'm not a teacher. We're just a couple people sitting around talking.
Yeah. And just to point out, you do a role. I mean, you are a teacher. You are an assistant teacher. You've been recognized as an assistant teacher. And I've seen you at Northampton. Someone new comes in.
Yeah.
You are there. You're the student is walking in, and you're willing. Actually, it's not even a conscious thought. It's just, this is just what you do. You don't have to think, oh, I'm a teacher now. Now I need to give. It's just natural. These are not artificial roles. And you know this already from your own experience. You, teacher, shows up. You, coming to Doksan, student, shows up. Always teacher, always student.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Michael, in that.
Just Michael, not me again.
No, I really think that, you know, the student, the person has to be ready.
Yeah.
And right, maybe not totally right. Maybe, you know, but... You know, maybe close.
Yeah.
Close. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Rich.
I like the double header.
Good.
So, Michael, you said something that I don't know if you want to rephrase it, because it struck me a certain way, and I'm not sure that's when you said, well, the teacher may be a few steps ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So that could really be taken the wrong way, I think.
On the path.
Right.
An experience.
What does that mean? I mean,
yeah. So yeah, what does it mean to you when you hear that?
When I hear it, it means it acts like a separation. Like,
you've
achieved something. You're on third base. I'm on second base.
Okay.
Uh huh. Yeah. The teacher has more experience in many cases. Mm. They may have more insight. But they're both, that may be the form answer to it, but the right. boundless answer to it is both human beings in the path of humanity, walking together.
Right, right.
So the few steps ahead can be looked at as the form, and the together can be looked at as the emptiness.
It's this paradox we've talked about more than
right.
once. Which is, on the one hand, right?
Right, right.
Persons of no name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On the other hand, some people have these flashy gold boxes, and you know, some people have teaching sticks, and some people are called assistant teachers,
right.
and some people
right.
are called senior assistant teachers.
Right.
So what's that all about?
Right, right.
And it's all about skillful means, you know?
Right.
How do we mutually benefit each other? When
right.
you talk about third base and second base, often how you get to third base is that somebody else gets a double and gets a second base. And that's what
right.
Michael was saying, where
right.
no student, no teacher.
Right.
And so it's all kind of mutually sustaining. And I don't think we need to get hung up on the hierarchical part.
Right.
Some
right.
Zen groups give all that up.
Right.
And then there's nobody actually teaching. So.
Right. Right. I'm actually not so hung up on the hierarchy part. I used to be. But I'm really not. I think just maybe the wording just hit me that way. But in general, no, I get it. You're there for a reason. I'm here for a reason.
Yeah. Marcus.
Thank you both for the talk. you know, what arose for me was, you know, I think, in the past, in similar situations, whether it's a relationship, a job promotion, and when something creates a different, you know, level, how easy it is to you know, think you have to become something different with a new title or a new, you know, thing in your life, and not understanding that, well, you're in that spot for the things that you've done, and not necessarily how you said, you know, now you have to become an expert, you know, and putting that thought behind it and thinking, well, now I got to really do something different. And it's, well, you became that because of what you've done, not what you're hopefully going to become. And how that's, you know, settled in my life in the past where it's, all right, now I'm ready to get going. And it's, you know, kind of missing the boat.
Right. Right. Missing the point. I mean, these are roles that we play. They're just roles. So what Alan was saying, they're roles that help the organization, help our practice. The chaos of organizations where there isn't any hierarchy, and there are some, isn't the choice that I would make for a place to belong.
And I think, you know, I want to just kind of put it back on you as well, is that I think it is far less about us up here and about you as a student, that you're bringing in all these ideas of who you are. Some, you know, you can show evidence, your husband, you know, your dad, you know, you've worked in this career, you know, all of these things we bring with us. I can do this, I can't do that, all of those things. And there is so much more that is here. You know, Michael chose Minju as far as face-to-face transmission. You know, if you're not sitting at as a Buddha right now, when will you do so? Mm-hmm. And so to really go ahead and to dig into that, we're talking here. Yeah, we're exchanging. And when are you going to sit as a Buddha? Jeff?
I don't know where from, but maybe something about eyebrow to eyebrow. Really, when you're... Anyway, eyebrow to eyebrow. What strikes me, something in that to me is eye to eye, you see exactly the same thing that the ancestors see, the teachers see. But there has to be a teacher or ancestor there. You can't just be eyebrow to eyebrow with anybody across, you know, on the street, right? So the same, but you need a teacher. I don't know. That's what.
Yeah. Entangling eyebrows. Yeah, that's from koan. And it's, you know, a phrase that's used in Zen with the masters. But it could also point to the fact that, you know, we all have, our eyes are horizontal, our nose is vertical, right? We all have this. We all, from this great nose hole society, we're all human beings traveling a path. And, right, no one is equal. I don't care how you want to spin it, but no one is equal. And each of us brings a gift to any relationship. That's one of the beauties of a relationship. Al, have a word for that?
Going back to where you started, Zeph. So this is from Wu Man's commentary to the first koan and the Gateless Gate. And he talks about how we can encounter one of the ancient teachers who's long dead and feel our eyebrows mingling with theirs, which would be a good trick for me because mine are kind of disappearing. but this idea that even the ancient teachers aren't gone. They didn't go anywhere. They're still right there. We immerse ourselves in a koan like this one, and suddenly we find ourselves that we find that it wasn't about ancient China, right, as Michael was saying a while ago. It's about us right now. And there we are, not outside looking in, but there in the koan. So, but where I think you were going with this is that you know, going back to Steve's question, you know, who chooses who, and really, Steve answers his own question. It's a meeting, a mingling of the minds. No one needs to choose. Suddenly, there you are. And there's this great intimacy. I think that's what you're talking about. And that's the experience one can have.
Chad.
Yeah, thank you all for the talk. It was sort of a continuous thing going through the machine here. But what arises for me is perspective, right? So for me, it's really, I get wrapped up in my own perspective sometimes, and then sometimes I need a check to kind of pull me back a little bit and say, oh, there's a different way of looking at this. Or cultivating that practice for myself to take the breath to then recognize what my perspective is, and then that opens the floor for everything to teach, right? And how I try to do things, not always successfully, but really just looking at every opportunity and what is the moment here if I can recognize my own limbs of that? So that's what grows for me. So in the case of the two steps forward, two steps back, it depends on what direction you're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing about perspective, the teacher's role is not to say that you see it wrong. It's to actually help you see. And the perspective that you take, the teacher meets it. You know, that's where we start. And then we go from there, together.
You know, I'm glad you used this word, check, because I'm finding myself really playing with this aspect there. There's both the check and the checking in, you know? So there is this aspect of this this check, which kind of might nudge, as Michael's saying, not telling wrong, but might nudge here or there and everything like that. And there's this aspect of just checking in, you know, what are you realizing? What is actually coming in? And I think, you know, just to be available, I think in this day and age, and maybe it's always been this way, of being able to show up authentically and to know that I can be authentic with this person and trust this person, that I can just kind of be this kind of check-in. And it's not about, am I right or am I wrong? It's that the ability to show up and the willingness to accept a little nudge here and maybe a little nudge there.
And I'll just add a little something to what Paul was saying about trust. The ultimate trust is trust you. You trust you.
Yeah.
And then the teacher and you could go forward.
It just struck me what Seth said, where you can't entangle with just anybody on the street. And I thought, but sometimes you can.
Yeah,
sometimes
exactly.
A teacher comes from left field, and they're probably reinforcing something you've heard in the Zen setting. Mm-hmm. But you suddenly get it. It's like, but they're not part of us. It's like the
really?
Stone hitting the mm-hmm. whatever. You never know what's going to be a teacher.
Right.
Where it's going to come.
Yeah. Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're not part of us, maybe this community here that we've, small little temporary community, but they're part of us as human community. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're just beings in general. I mean, there's so many teachers and not all of them breathe. So, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Aaron.
Yeah, just people talking just got me thinking about the student teacher and, I guess the recognition on the student's part that this is a teacher. You know, maybe they don't see them as a teacher at first, and then they say something or something happens, and then there's this recognition that they had a teacher. And I don't know, that just struck me as kind of cool in a way that there's this sharing of recognition.
Right, right, because we go through this whole dialogue, and then at the end, it's only at the end where he becomes the student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really appreciate this word, Aaron, recognition. Because sometimes when we talk about recognizing somebody, it's because we knew them before. And now I finally recognize them. And that's how it is. And that was the experience I think Anna was talking about. You see some stranger on the street and you recognize each other. And it's kind of mysterious, but something is elicited that you both know, that's deeply familiar. And I think that's what can happen in a teacher-student relationship, is that kind of recognition. You know, no, we didn't play in the same sandbox together as decades ago, but it feels just like we did. That's it.
This is kind of reminding me of like moments that I've been having when I walk in Keenan, and I feel this way about teachers. Like, so with teachers, if I feel what you're saying, like I can just feel that recognition and it's just there. And then if I start thinking, oh, this is my teacher and I'm supposed to learn something, or, you know, I get in the way. And in Keenan, I'll have these moments of feeling like what Jenny called us, the 40-eyed compassion something, but now I think it's 46, and we're like, I can feel this as like 46 legs, and I feel this, and then all of a sudden I kind of check on it, like I'm like, oh, are the legs moving in the right way? And I like feel like I forget how to walk.
Yeah.
Like I feel like all of a sudden then I have to relearn, and I'm like, oh no, like, and then I meddled with it a little bit, and I feel myself, like I can notice that pattern in everything, but with teachers too, like, oh, I can feel the teaching coming, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should get a little more like this, or am I doing, you know, and then I can just feel that flow, so.
Yeah, and I would actually correct that word, relearn, to remember. Remember. Right? Bring all this together, all to here, right now.
Yeah, it's actually literally remembering,
yes,
like with my legs.
Yes.
I'm like remembering myself again. Like, oh no, back.
Yeah. With that 47-headed creature. Remind me of the story about the caterpillar that starts to think about which leg should I move first and then can't move anymore. I was doing fine before.
And I think this is part of that kind of deep trust as well. And I mean, at least, you know, for me in this koan is that that's what Liapu is obeying. He's obeying that trust. I know I'm giving it away, but, you know, he's obeying that trust. It's not about imitation. He's really obeying that trust.
Yeah. Matt.
Yeah, thank you all three for the talks. I was struck a little with what you said, Michael, about, you know, sometimes someone is not ready and you just know, and then, you know, it is what it is. And I, having been in Doksan not ready and also ready, I think sometimes not ready is this moment's ready. And, you know, you come in maybe with your fences up and you have that kind of interaction, and then, wow, is that all, you know, like you're left with that.
Right.
Or I'm speaking for myself, I'm left with that, I've come in my bubble and I haven't let anyone pop it, and is that what I'm here for? Mm-hmm. And then that puts me in a different place maybe next time. So it's all the story. It's like it's I'm forgetting his name. He comes in and he's doing what he does, not because that's what this interchange calls for, but because this is who I am. Okay, I'm standing here. I'm not going to bow.
Right.
And he needs to shift. He ends up. That's what allows him to make the next move.
Right. And it's the teacher to show him, ask him, what are you defending? What are you defending? I really love what Dick said yesterday about just coming forward and saying that this is can be painful, right? The shell that we've placed in front of us that's so real and so strong and so important in many respects, and to have that pierced. And actually, the teacher doesn't pierce it. it's you sort of see the vaporous quality of it, you know, and then it sort of disappears on its own. Yeah.
I wonder if you could thank you all, and wondering if you could speak, because I'm thinking more and more in my life that I've had people who I, and people say this, oh, that person is my greatest teacher for how not to be. So it's not really like this wonderful, like, oh, we see each other and we meet. But actually what's happened through the years, it used to be more like kind of this softening to sort of say, oh, in seeing that, I can sometimes like, see their suffering, or see, so it's less like, I don't want to be like that, you know, so.
Yeah, and right there, you're reviewing the edges of what is a teacher. You know, you're your own teacher in many respects, right? So you're seeing something there that you can transition or transform from, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm echoing somebody by saying this, but like, we're all our own teacher.
Yeah.
And like, I need a teacher. Like, I'm not saying
right.
Like, oh,
both.
I'm good.
Both.
But,
both.
Like,
yeah.
Both. Like my experience, you know, it's like my experience is following that flame, you know, just watching it.
Right.
It's like that. And everything.
And this practice is makes us ripe to be our own teacher and to be our own student. If someone were to walk off the street and come into this room, we couldn't teach them anything. They couldn't learn anything. It is this environment that we've created here, this special environment to allow that to come forth, that we can be a teacher and a student and to be open to that.
This cooking that, you know, I was trying to allude to, and, you know, there's so much cooking that is required, I think, for us. And the satisfaction is being able to show up, and it's a feast. It's a feast for the teacher and the student. And I think it's because we've done the cooking, we've put the work in, we've been willing to be with. And then when we come together, I think that's when the fruits arrive. Not that they haven't been there before, but there is that opportunity to be recognized and to feast. Yeah.
There's a Zen saying that I love, Wix, which is the family treasure does not come in through the door. You know, and that's what you're pointing to. That you don't get it from outside.
Yeah.
The family treasure doesn't come in through the door. But sometimes you need somebody to say to you, the family treasure doesn't come in.
Right, yeah.
Again, then you're like, yeah. Oh! And that can open you up to experiences that you were keeping from yourself because you kept looking outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what a teacher can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Help you to be who you already are, help you to discover what you already have, help you to realize what you already deeply know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, one more. Okay. Yeah, I think we have
it. Yeah,
go. Last one.
I'm very sensitive to insults.
To what?
Insults.
Insults.
Like
it's just you.
You're the only one who's sensitive to insults.
Yeah.
I tend to sulk rather than fight back.
Mm.
And I love hearing characters and koans insult each other. And there's a couple in this koan that are. I wonder why that is, like the it warms my heart to have somebody. There's another koan where an old lady I don't know, it's hard to go into, but a good, respectable monk, and there he goes, doing his thing again.
So look into your own heart. Why? Well, not why, but what is this?
Yeah.
You see something about that interchange that maybe touches you, maybe inspired. Like, I really am a phoenix.
Yeah.
I want to be the phoenix. Yeah.